because at this time of the year we're in the middle of the mitzvah of Sfiras Omer, it is an opportunity for us to just speak in today's shiur about the halachos of Sfira. And obviously there's a lot to talk about, where we're going to focus our attention on one aspect of Sfiras HaOmer, and that is, by way of introduction, we begin with a comment of the great Rav Zevin. In his Sefer HaMoadim BaHalacha, he writes the following: Lo Rav Hu HaMakom. There's a very limited amount of primary sources that you will find Shehukdash Ba'ofen Yashir LeHilchos HaSfira. There are very few sources in Chumash and in the Gemara itself that are dedicated to the laws of Sfiras HaOmer. Daf Echad B'Talmud, says Rav Zevin, only one page in the Gemara, which is unusual, because when it comes to many other halachas, you have pages and pages of discussion. Arba halachas b'Rambam, only four sentences that are dedicated in all of the Rambam's works. Siman Echad B'Tur V'Shulchan Aruch, only one chapter in Tur and Shulchan Aruch that discuss the laws of Sfira. V'zeh HaKol, and that is all that you will find. Aval Mu'ad Zeh Machzik Es HaMaruba, says Rav Zevin, this very limited amount of sources are really the basis and the foundation for a rich discussion that we find. And Pe'erosa Misasvim, he says, from there we outsource to so many different places, and there is so much discussion about the permutations of how one is supposed to do the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, and all of the halachic challenges that go into it as well. Your husband made my head swim when he was talking about going to China on business and figuring out what he's going to do about Sfira and which way he's flying, and he's going to miss a day in either direction. I still haven't figured out what to tell him. I'm not ignoring his email. But there are many, many different aspects of Sfira HaOmer, and what I'd like to do today is just focus on one part of the mitzvah of Sfira, with the understanding that there is so much more to talk about, but we don't have enough time. We begin with the main source, which is the pasuk in Chumash in which we describe the mitzvah of Sfira HaOmer. And this is a very critical pasuk in terms of understanding what the mitzvah is all about. We begin with Parshas Bahar, which is in Sefer Vayikra, Perek Chafalef, Pasuk Tezvav. U'smartim lachem mi macharas ha-Shabbos. And you should begin the count of Sfira, 49 days, mi macharas ha-Shabbos. Now this is already a point of major dispute. What do you mean mi macharas ha-Shabbos? Generally that means Matzei Shabbos, Sunday. So is it really true that Pesach falls out every year in a way that we can start the Sfira on a Matzei Shabbos Sunday morning? That doesn't seem to be the case. So what does the Torah mean when it says, Usfartem lachem mi macharas ha-Shabbos? What is very important to understand here is that there were, as we spoke of a number of months ago when we talked about Pirkei Avos, in the times of the Bayis Sheni, it was a very difficult time in Jewish history. There were two dominant factions of the Jewish community. There were what we refer to as the Prushim, and they were the traditional Jews. And then there were those who went off, who were referred to as the Tzedukim. Now, it's a little bit ironic that we, the traditional Jews, were referred to as the Prushim. Lifrosh means to separate. So they should have been the Prushim. We are not the ones who separated. We're the ones who stuck to the tradition. They're the ones who decided to veer off. But that was the name that they gave us in a way to put us down. So they called us the Prushim, even though we were the ones who were not separating at all. We were sticking to the same tradition that we've always stuck to, but we were referred to as the Prushim. And there were many, many disputes between these two divisions of the Jewish community, between the Tzedukim and the Prushim. The Gemara Maseches Menachos Samachay writes that the first dispute that broke out between these two communities was with regard to the offering of the Karban HaTamid every day. So the Gemara says, we have an obligation to bring a Tamid every morning and a Karban Tamid every evening. This is something that happened every day in the Beis HaMikdash. And exactly how this Karban was going to be brought makes a major difference, because if it's something that's done not just once a year, but every single day, twice a day, we need to make sure that we do it right. And the Tzedukim came along and said, Yachid Misnadev, if one Jew, one philanthropist, steps forward and says, I would like to dedicate the Karban HaTamid by myself on behalf of the entire Jewish people, I have the ability to do that. And the Prushim, the traditional Jews, said, absolutely not. After all of this is meant to be a communal obligation. And we do not have the right to accept the money of one individual person and offer his carbon on behalf of all of us. We need to all be contributors to the carbon. Now, how can that be? How much does a carbon cost already? It can cost a few million dollars, so how is it possible that all of us can be contributors to this Karban HaTamid? So the Gemara says this is why they had the institution of Machatzis HaShekel. Once a year, every Jew used to give a little bit of money That was put into a big communal fund, and from that fund is where they took all of the money to offer the daily karbanos on behalf of the entire Jewish people. And therefore, we were the ones who took the position that we need to have this karban offered by the entire Klal Yisrael. It cannot be given by one individual person. That was the first dispute that broke out between the Tzdukim and the Prushim, between these two divisions of the Jewish community. And the Gemara tells us there, in Menachos Samachay, that when our community, when the Prushim finally had their way, it went back and forth. The leadership of the Beis HaMikdash sometimes had members of the Tzduki community, sometimes had members of the Prushim. As crazy as that sounds, that's what happened. So the Gemara there says, when we finally won out, when our leaders were then once again in charge of the Beis HaMikdash and all that took place there, we made a tremendous celebration. And the Gemara says they made a celebration that was almost like Hanukkah. They made a 7-day celebration because they rededicated the Beis HaMikdash, because things once again were going the way they should. So this was something that is a worthy reason to celebrate. When we finally won out, when our position was once again accepted, when we dedicated the Beis HaMikdash to be running with the service that it is supposed to be run, that was a great reason to celebrate. Similar to that, the Gemara then tells us that they had a second dispute, and that was with regard to the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer. How do we interpret this phrase, Usfartem Lachem Mimacharas HaShabbos? We're supposed to start counting Sfira on Sunday. Now, what does that mean? The Tzedukim said, well, read the Pasuk in Chumash, and you take it very literally. It means, doesn't matter when Pesach falls out, you begin to start counting the Sfiras HaOmer on a Matzei Shabbos Sunday morning. That is always Mimacharas HaShabbos. That's what it means. And as we know, the traditional Jews did not accept that. So what does the Torah mean when it says, Mimacharas HaShabbos? What are we referring to? So Rashi there comments, what it means is that we start to count after the Yom Tov of Pesach begins, which is, we have the first day of Yom Tov, which is Tesvav Nisan. The next day, which is Mimacharas HaShabbos, we say Havdalah after the first day of Yom Tov, going into Chol HaMoed. That first day, which is Mimacharas HaShabbos, Shabbos here is a reference to Yom Tov, so there we start to count Sfiras HaOmer, and that is really what begins this whole process of the 49 days leading up to Shavuos. And the Gemara there tells us as well, once our position was accepted, this was a major point of debate between the two communities, once our position was accepted, once again we had a major reason to celebrate. What triggered, let me just explain, what triggered the Sfiras HaOmer? The Pasuk says, the offering of the Karban HaOmer. In order to have the Karban HaOmer offered, they had to go and cut down the wheat in the fields. And the Gemara says they made such a big celebration when they went out to cut the wheat right after Pesach was completed after the first day, all the surrounding communities would come out. Why did they do that? What's so exciting about cutting down the wheat? The answer is, what's exciting is, we try to show everybody that we celebrate the fact that our traditional position was once again accepted, and therefore we're going to have as many people as we can coming to celebrate together with us in this seemingly mundane activity of cutting down the grain for the purpose of the karban, but it was not mundane at all. That was a point of major debate in the Jewish community, and when our position won out, that was a major reason to celebrate. So that's what the first phrase here means, Usfartem Lachem Mimacharas HaShabbos. We don't begin counting Sfira on a Sunday, we begin counting Sfira immediately after the first day of Pesach, which is better known as Tes Zayin Nisan. Now, when it comes to regular davening throughout the year, there's a major discussion in the Gemara about what language one is allowed to daven in. And the Gemara writes in Maseches Shabbos Daf Yud Beis that it depends. It depends if somebody's davening Bitzibur, if somebody's davening together with a minyan, or if somebody is davening at home by themselves. Why should there be a distinction? Well, says the Gemara, a very surprising comment. The davening, as we know, was instituted to be said in Hebrew. Now, writes the Gemara, not everybody understands Hebrew, and maybe there would be people who would better understand and have more meaning if they daven in English, or whatever language you speak. So why don't we do that? So the Gemara says, you're right, you are able to daven in the vernacular. You are able to daven in whatever language you understand. However, the Gemara says, that is only provided that you're together with a minyan. If you're davening at home, however, and you're davening alone, so then the Gemara says you have to make sure to daven in Lashon HaKodesh, in the way you find it in the Siddur itself. What is the difference? Why should we say that when you daven in Shul, you can daven in any language, and when you daven at home, you have to daven in Hebrew? Why do we have such an insistence? What should the difference be? And the Gemara explains something that I have no understanding of, but this is what the Gemara says. The Gemara tells us that when you daven alone, there's a limited amount of power that your tefillah can have. You're only one individual. How far do you think your tefillah can go? However, the Gemara says, when you're davening together with a minyan, when you're davening together with others, there is tremendous power in the fact that you're davening together with a community. And therefore, the Gemara says, when I daven together with others, I don't need the Malachi Hashareis to assist me in bringing my tefillah up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I have a direct connection by virtue of the fact that I'm together with many others who are davening, and the power of all of our tefillos together go up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we need no assistance. However, when I daven by myself, the Gemara says, there's a limited amount of power that I can have in my own tefillah, and therefore I need the assistance, so to speak, of the Malachi Hashareis. Not that I daven to the Malachim, but just I ask them to offer my tefillah before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore what? Therefore, says the Gemara, Malachi Hashareis do not understand the vernacular. What that means, I don't know. I would imagine, if they figured out how to do many other things in the world, they can also figure out how to go to an Alpan class and learn whatever language they need to learn. But that's what the Gemara says. Malachi Hashareis ein nizkakin. They don't listen or they don't understand a tefillah that is offered in any other language. And therefore, if I'm davening by myself and I need the assistance of the Malachim, I must make sure to do that in Lashon HaKodesh, a language that they will understand. If I'm davening together with a minyan and we do not need the Malachi Hashareis, so then we assume that my tefillah goes up automatically and there's no reason to insist on davening in Lashon HaKodesh. That is what the Gemara says. That is the way the Shulchan Aruch paskins as well. I mentioned this a few weeks ago by the Tehillim group that we have on Wednesday evenings. And I said that Rabbi Avadya Yosef has an amazing comment in his Haggadah in which he writes that the Gemara tells us that it's true when you daven b'yechidus, when you daven alone, you have to make sure to daven b'lashon HaKodesh. However, the Gemara says in Shabbos Daf Yud Beis that when you're at the bedside of a chole, there is no need to daven b'lashon HaKodesh because there you do not need the assistance of the Malachi Hashareis either. The Gemara has an assumption that shchila lemala mirashosav shel hachola. We have an assumption that God's presence is there at the bedside of the chole, and therefore when you go to visit a chole, you have a direct connection. It's an amazing opportunity that we have. And in fact, the Shulchan Aruch writes, whenever we do the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, the Ramah says that the main objective of the mitzvah is to offer a tefillah. It's very nice to come and visit, but the Ramah says, quoting the Ramban in the Torah Sa'adam, if you come to a chola and you do not offer a tefillah before you leave, you have not fulfilled your mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. So that's a very important concept to keep in mind. Now, it's sometimes inappropriate to stand by the bedside of a chola and offer a tefillah in their face. It's not something that will make them comfortable, but it's something you should try to do. Usually when I walk out of a room, I try my best to offer some kind of tefillah for the person that I have just visited. And there, says the Gemara, because you are in the presence of the Shechina itself by visiting this person who is now sick, you now have the opportunity to speak directly with God Himself who is there present in the room. It's an amazing perspective that the Gemara shares. But I share all of this because it is relevant to Sfiras HaOmer. So as we said, the general concept is when you're davening by yourself, you have to make sure to daven in Lashon HaKodesh. When you daven together with a minyan, you're allowed to daven in any language that you understand. Now we turn to the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, and the Magen Avraham has a very surprising comment. And it's surprising on two levels. Number one, the Magen Avraham says that one is allowed to do the Sfiras HaOmer in any language that they understand. That's comment number one. You're allowed to say the Sfira not only in Lashon HaKodesh, but if you speak French or Spanish or English, you're allowed to say the Sfira Sa'omer every evening in whatever language you understand, which seems to be against the regular principle of davening. If I'm davening by myself, I have to do Lashon HaKodesh. How come by Sfira Sa'omer, I'm allowed to do it in any language? And number two, says the Magen Avraham, contrary to many other mitzvos, here by Sfiras HaOmer, if I say it in Lashon HaKodesh and I do not understand the words that I'm saying, I am not in fulfillment of the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer. Whereas by Tefillah, if I daven and I don't understand the words that I'm saying in Hebrew, of course I fulfill my obligation because I'm just reading the text as it's supposed to be read. I would venture to say most people who read the Siddur don't fully understand every word that they're saying, but we're all in fulfillment of the mitzvah because We're saying it in the way it's supposed to be said. And yet here the Magen Avraham writes two very important chidushim. Number one, he says, if you want to say it in any other language, you have a right to do so as long as you understand that other language. Number two, he says, if you say it in Lashon HaKodesh, in the original, and you don't understand the words that you are now reciting, you have not fulfilled your obligation. And the Aruch HaShulchan challenges this, and he says, this seems to go against everything that we understand to be true with regard to the regular laws of Tefillah. Why should Sfiras HaOmer be different? And the answer is very simple. The answer is given by the great Dvar Avram, one of the Gedolim before the Holocaust. And there the Dvar Avram writes, my father quotes us in one of his Sfarim, that the answer is as follows. Whereas by any other mitzvah, you just have to say the text. But when it comes here to the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, by nature of the definition, what it means to count is, you have to know what you're up to, you have to understand where you're going to and where you're coming from. Otherwise, you cannot refer to that as a count. What kind of count would that be if somebody doesn't even understand what it is? I remember in our family, we had an anniversary for my parents, a 50th anniversary a few years ago, and my sisters in Israel made t-shirts and all kinds of different things, and everything had the tagline, Shechter Chogegim Yovel. So if you understand what Yovel is, so you understand what it means, to celebrate a Yovel means you celebrate 50 years. I remember we brought the t-shirts home for my kids, and they're looking at this, and they were saying the phrase, but they have no idea what it means. So I was reminded of this point here of the Dvar Avram. If you don't know what it means that you're celebrating, if you don't even know what the reference is, then what kind of celebration is that? You don't even know that that represents 50 because you don't know what Yovel means. And therefore, says the Dvar Avram, how can we refer to this as a count if we don't even understand the words that we're saying? You can read it, but if you don't really have an understanding of where you're up to, where you're coming from, and where you're going to, there, says the Dvar Avram, that would be something that would stand in the way of our observance of the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer. And this is very similar to a comment that is made by the great Baal HaMar in the back of the Gemara in Maseches Pesachim. So the Baal HaMar asks what I believe is a very obvious question. And I don't know why most people intuitively don't think of this, but I think when you consider it, it's something that's quite obvious. Writes the Baal HaMar, isn't it strange that when it comes to every Yom Tov, here for us living in Chutz La'aretz today, we keep 2 days of Pesach, both the first days and the second days. 2 days of Shavuos, 2 days of Sukkos. Why do we do that? Good question. It's a very good question. So the answer is, the Gemara explains why. The Gemara says because back in the times of Chazal, the way that they used to know that it was Rosh Chodesh was because two witnesses used to come into the Beis Din in Yerushalayim, and they would declare that they saw the new moon, and then messengers would go out to all the neighboring communities to let them know that it is Rosh Chodesh. Now, how long does it take the messengers to get to all the communities? How far can they go? Well, they only had a horse and buggy, and even if you sent out 100 messengers or 500 messengers, there's a limited amount of locations that they can get to. So the Gemara says that not all communities were informed, and some people had to guess when was Rosh Chodesh. They weren't exactly sure. By the time it came halfway through the month, the 15th day of the month, by then you could look at the moon and you know basically where you're up to. The moon seems to be full. So either you're 1 day off in either direction. So by then everybody basically knew, but they can only make a mistake of 1 day. So when it comes Pesach, Tesvav Nisan, how do I know that I'm not eating chametz on Pesach if I don't live in those neighboring communities that are near Yerushalayim? Well, says the Gemara, therefore, you need to make sure that you keep 2 days of Pesach, because you're not exactly sure. Is today the right day? Is tomorrow the right day? Now, writes the Gemara, we have a fixed calendar today. Nobody has any doubt when it's Rosh Chodesh, when Pesach is, when Sukkot is. We all know with certainty. But yet the Gemara says, when it comes to this halacha, minag avoseinu biyadeinu, we have kept this tradition, although it seems not to make any sense to us. And even when the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt, and we're going to go back to that system of having witnesses come in and rededicating the month every single month by that system, it's still going to be a question. All we're going to need is one tweet from the Beis Din HaGadol that's going to tell everybody in the world in 1 second when it's Rosh Chodesh. Or you can even watch it on live stream. So nobody's going to have any doubt when it is Rosh Chodesh anymore. Are we really going to have to keep 2 days? That is a very good question. I don't know what the halacha is going to be. But for now, we keep 2 days. Now, what does it mean that we keep 2 days of Pesach? It means that you do the first night of Pesach, which we know is the real night, and you make all those brachos, and you eat matzah, and you eat maror, and dalet kosos, and you say the Haggadah, and you daven, and you say halal, and birchas kohanim, and all the things that we do on Yantiv. Comes the second day, which we know today is not really the day, and yet, although we know it's not really the day of Pesach, we do the whole thing over again. And we sit down and we eat matzah and maror, and we make all those brachas again, and we say halal, and we say birchas kohanim, and everything that we do on a yomtiv, we do once again, a second time on the second day of yomtiv, even though we know it's not real. Well, ask the Baal HaMor, if that's the way we always do it, why is it when it comes to Sfiras HaOmer that we don't do the very same? Every night of Sfira, which by the way, today is the 10th day of the Omer, so you should all remember, if you haven't counted Sfira last night, you can count now without a bracha. So we generally assume that every time you have a suffix, you do something twice. So ask the Baal HaMor, how come every night of Sfira you don't get up when you count and say, today is the 10th day of the Omer, but maybe it's the 9th day of the Omer? And why don't you get up tomorrow night and say, well, tonight is the 11th day of the Omer, but maybe it's the 10th? I should count twice every night, the same way I would have two seders and eat matzah twice and eat maror twice and say halal twice. Why shouldn't I also count Sfira twice every night? And don't say that maybe it's a bracha levatala, because we're not concerned about a bracha levatala when it comes to all those brachas that you say on Seder night over again when we know it's not real. So why don't we do the same here? I think it's a very good question. Pretty obvious. So what's the answer? In fact, the Minchas Chinuch even asks, why don't we do that every night of Chanukah? Right? We should have, you know, everybody asked the question, Chanukah time, why do we have 8 days of Chanukah? The miracle is only 7. I asked the question, why do we have 8? We should have 9. Because we're not sure which day is which. And every night of Chanukah, we should have to light 2 menorahs. We should have to light one that says, maybe tonight is 1, maybe tonight is 2. And maybe tonight is 2, maybe it's 3. We don't do that. And that's a very good question. Why by Chanukah do we not do that? Why by Purim do we not have 2 days of Purim? I think we would all go nuts. But why is it that by certain halachas we observe 2 and certain halachas we do not? Well, here, the answer is as follows. The answer is very simple. The Dvar Avram suggests, what kind of count would that be? Imagine you ask somebody, how old are you? I'm not sure. I'm 35, I'm 36, or for others, I'm 65, I'm 66. So you're not exactly sure how old you are. Well, what do you mean? Just do the math. Figure it out. What kind of keeping count is that if you don't even know where you're up to? Well, says the Dvar Avram, what would it mean if every night of Sfira we would say, I'm not sure where I'm up to. Maybe it's 2, maybe it's 3, maybe it's 10, maybe it's 11. That's not a count. By definition, a count means I know exactly where I'm up to and where I'm headed and how many days I have left. Imagine you have somebody who's anticipating the day of their wedding and you ask them, how many days left? I don't know. We'll see when we get there. Maybe it's 10, maybe it's 20. I'm not exactly sure. Well, that shows that you don't really care enough, because if you really cared enough, you would know exactly when it's supposed to be and where you're up to and how many days you have left. Well, therefore, says the Dvar Avram, that's exactly what happens by Sfiras HaOmer. Yes, it's true. We do all of the mitzvahs twice when it comes to Pesach and Sukkot and Shavuos and everything else. But the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, by definition, means you need to keep account. You need to understand what you're up to. And if you don't have an understanding of what you're up to, and every day that somebody asks you, you say, I'm not sure, maybe it's today, maybe it's yesterday, that is not called a count at all. And therefore, he says, this would be different than all the other rules that we find with regard to Yom Tov Sheni throughout the year. That is similar to what we just explained with regards to the halacha of the Magen Avram. The Magen Avram says, by definition, if you say the words in the Siddur, and you have no understanding of what it is that you're saying, you don't know what the count means, you don't know what you're up to, you would have no meaning to that mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, and there would be no observance of the mitzvah either, even if you said it in the original Hebrew language, because when it comes to a count, one needs to understand what it is that they're saying. As we mentioned before, the primary source for the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer is this pasuk in Parshas Bahar. And there, if we look at it a little bit further, we already discussed Usvartam Lachem, we start the count. We need to understand the count. We need to make sure that we say only one day every day, and we don't flip-flop to cover our bases. Maybe it's yesterday, maybe it's tomorrow. Then we discuss Mimachras HaShabbos. What does that mean? You count from the day after Shabbos. Obviously, it doesn't mean you start counting on Sunday. It rather means you start counting on Tes Zayin Nisan, which is the day after the first day of Pesach. Which reminds me, I remember Rabbi J.J. Schachter, when I was in Smicha, he showed us something that I'll never forget. It's relevant this week. It has nothing to do with the shiur, but it's relevant this week to the to Yom HaShoah, and I was just reminded as I was saying this. So there was a committee that was formed in the Knesset to figure out when would be the most appropriate day in the calendar to have Yom HaShoah commemorated. And they were back and forth, they were doing research, I forgot how long it took them, I think a few months, and they were doing all kinds of research to figure out when would be the most appropriate day to do it. Finally, the committee did all the research and they came back to the Knesset and they said, I remember what he showed us. It was from the Divrei HaKnesset. They have like minutes of all the Knesset meetings. I don't know how he found this thing. But it says in there that the committee member came back. His name was Albert Sprintzak. And he was the one who was given the task of figuring out when would be the most appropriate day. He came back and he told the Knesset that the best day to do it would be on Yud Daled Nisan. So everyone's looking at each other and one Knesset member stands up. He says, that's Erev Pesach. Why would you do it Erev Pesach? So he says, you're right, so let's do it the day after Erev Pesach. It's a sad story, but it's amazing. So here when it says, V'svartem lachem mimachras ha-Shabbos, you have to do the math. When do you start counting Sfiras HaOmer? You start counting Sfiras HaOmer on the day after the first day of Pesach, which is Tes Zayin Nisan. Now we go to the next part of the pasuk and we're told, Miyom havi'achem es Omer ha-Tenufa. You start counting from the day that you bring the Karban HaOmer. When do you bring the Karban HaOmer? Tes Zayin Nisan. The second day of Pesach is the day that you bring the Karban HaOmer, and that is what gets this whole process going. From there, you count Sheva Shabbosos Tmimos Tehiyena. You have to count 7 weeks, which is 49 days, Ad Mimachres HaShabbos HaShviyis, Tisbru Chamishim Yom VeHikravtem Mincha Chadash Al Hashem. At the end of the 49 days, then you have the celebration of Shavuos, and then you offer another carbon. So this is bookended. You have a carbon Omer at the beginning, then you have the carbon on Shavuos that ends this mitzvah of Svira, and in between you have the count. So the question is, when you read this pasuk, you ask yourself, would this mitzvah apply today or perhaps not? What would you say? Well, I know that we all count Svira. But the question is, leaving aside what we do, let's look at this pasuk and try to figure out, do we count Svira today or not? Is this something that the Torah would expect us to do? So the truth is, if you look at the Torah, it says, you start counting Sfiras HaOmer, Miyom HaViyachem Es Omer HaTenufa, from the day that you bring the carbon and the Beis HaMikdash. Well, today, Litzah Reino HaRav, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. So really, the mitzvah should not apply. The Rambam says, no, that is a mistake. The Rambam says that in our generation, the mitzvah stays, it remains the same. Because what triggers the mitzvah is not the offering of the carbon and the Beis HaMikdash. What triggers the mitzvah is Miyom HaViyachem, Tes Zayin, the day on the calendar that says Tes Zayin Nisan. That is what begins, that's what kicks off this mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, and therefore even at a time when you have no Beis HaMikdash, even at a time when you don't bring the Karban, you still have the mitzvah in its original form, the same way it was supposed to be observed in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu. However, most of the Rishonim disagree with the Rambam, and they say no. Today, when we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, and we don't offer the Karban HaOmer in our generation because we don't have that opportunity, we also do not have the requirement to fulfill this mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer. This doesn't exist. Why do we do it? Is a very good question. And the answer to that is, we'll see in a few minutes. But you'll ask yourself, what is the difference? It's obviously a mitzvah derabanan today. Obviously there was an institution that we should do it. What's the difference if it's d'oraisa or d'rabbanan? Either way, we have to do it. Either way, we need to do it. So what's the difference if you assume that the pasuk is taken literally and we have a mitzvah d'oraisa today as we always had, like the Rambam's position, or if you assume the other way that this is only a mitzvah mid'rabbanan? And the answer to that is, one answer is bein hashmashos. Bein hashmashos is what we consider to be something that is a little bit unknown. We're not sure, is that day? Is it night? Do we consider it the day before or the day after? So if you count Sfira during Bein HaShmashos, have you fulfilled your obligation? If we were to assume that Sfiras HaOmer is a biblical obligation, then you have to err on the side of caution and wait until it's Vaday Laila. You have to wait until it's certainly nightfall in order to do the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer. But because we generally assume that Sfiras HaOmer is only Midurabanan in our generation, therefore you have a right to count Sfira already during the time of Bein HaShmashos, where we're not sure exactly if it's nightfall yet, since it's only Midrabanan anyway, so you don't have to be that careful, you don't have to wait until Tzeis HaKochavim. Many Rishonim say that you would be allowed to count Sfira even during the time of Bein Hashmashos, that twilight zone of the day when we're not sure exactly when it is. But the basis of this whole dispute between the Rambam and the other Rishonim is, how do we interpret this pasuk? Do we assume that the pasuk means what triggers our obligation is the offering of the karban, and therefore today we don't have that trigger because we don't have a Beis Hamikdash, we don't have a karban? Or would you say no, it's the day on the calendar that triggers our obligation, and because we have the same calendar today as we had thousands of years ago, therefore the nature of the obligation remains the same and there is nothing that would change at all? This also makes a difference with regard to the obligation that women have for the mitzvah of Sviras HaOmer. By way of introduction, there is a surprising comment of the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah, you can look it up on your own. The Mishnah Berurah writes that women should not count Sviras HaOmer. Why should women not count Sfira? Just hold on carefully. The Mishnah Berurah writes two reasons. Reason number one, says the Mishnah Berurah, is because in his generation, the women didn't understand those sentences of Sfiras HaOmer. I don't understand what he means. And even if it was true 100 years ago, it's certainly not the case today. Religious women in our community certainly understand when they open up the Siddur and they say, Asher Kedushanu B'mitzvosa V'tzivanu, they know exactly what they're saying. When they count every night a Sfira, today is one, today is two, they know exactly what the Hebrew words mean. Maybe 100 years ago, most of the women did not understand that. That's what the Mishnah Berurah says. I have a hard time understanding what that means. What? Yeah, so I don't know. That's what the Mishnah Berurah writes, and therefore he says that was reason number one, that the women didn't count Sfira. I think that reason does not apply anymore. It's just not the reality in our generation because we are educated. The second reason the Mishnah Berurah gives is because since a woman does not go to shul for Ma'ariv at night generally, she usually stays at home, so she doesn't have the inborn reminder of counting Sfira every night. And therefore he says it's so easy to forget one night of Sfira, he may as well not make a bracha at all. I think today, I don't know about everyone in the room, but I never signed up for any texts or any chats or any emails, and I still get them. And I unsubscribe every year from all of them, and I still get them anyway. We have so many reminders, and our children make the Sfira charts, or our grandchildren, and we have so many ways to remind ourselves. I think both of the positions of the Mishnah Berurah are really not so relevant in our generation, and this is why I think most women that we are familiar with have taken upon themselves to count Sfiras HaOmer. Now, do women have an obligation to count Sfira or not? That is a very, very good question. We start with the Gemara in Maseches Kiddushin, Daf Chavtes, where the Gemara has the famous principle, if you have a mitzvah, saseh shehazman grama. If you have a mitzvah that is a time-bound obligation, generally we assume that women are not obligated to fulfill that. Just by a show of hands, how many do you think are in this whole category of mitzvah, saseh shehazman grama? Sometimes you ask and people think like 100. There are maybe 7 or 8 mitzvahs that you can fit into this category. So the whole discussion in the first place is not so expansive. And there are more exceptions to the rule than the rule itself. Like, for example, on the night of the Seder, that's certainly a time-bound mitzvah. We should say women shouldn't have to drink dalet kosos, shouldn't have to eat matzah, shouldn't have to eat mar. That is not the case. So we have many, many exceptions to the rule, but the rule is mitzvah saseh shehazman grama, women do not have an obligation to fulfill. Now, why is that the case? Why do we assume that women are exempt from a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama? Writes the Avodram, if you look at number hey, lefi shehaisha Mishu Bedes Labaila. Don't make a mistake and think it means that she is a slave. That's not what Mishu Bedes means. Mishu Bedes means that a woman has responsibility to her family. And therefore, says the Avodram, here we have a problem. If a woman, look what he writes, Im haisa mechuyeves b'mitzvas haseh shehazman grama. If the Torah would demand of her that she has to say Kriya Shema every morning by a certain time, and she has to say Kriya Shema every night by a certain time, and she has to do all of these mitzvahs that are so rigid based on the time schedule, Efshar, it is possible, Shebishas Asiyas HaMitzvah, Yitzava Osa HaBaal Lasos Mitzvaso. Says the Avodram, what's going to happen? The husband's going to come home from work. He had a very difficult day. All he wants is to sit and talk to his wife. And she's going to say, sorry, I got to run out to Mincha. I got to go to Ma'arav. I have to say Kriya Shema. I have to put on tefillin. I have to do all these things. And what kind of marriage is that going to be? What kind of house is that going to be? Now, you'll ask yourself, what about the husband? It's a good question. But, says the Avodram, Im tasa mitzvahs habore, oy lami baila. Says the Avodram, God felt bad for the woman that she's going to be so conflicted. If she's going to listen to her husband, she's going to be worried, what kind of punishment am I going to get from God for listening to my husband? If she's going to go listen to God, she's going to be concerned, I'm going to let down my family. And therefore the Avodram says, the Ribono Shel Olam decided, Lefikach, Patra Habore Mi Mitzvosav Kidei Lios Shalom Im Baila. God wanted that there should be peace in the home. God wanted that the home should function. And therefore he said, I don't want them to have to run out and be involved in all of these mitzvahs that are rigid in their time when they can be performed. And therefore a woman is not obligated to perform those mitzvahs. That is the way the Avodram explains it. There is an alternative interpretation that I've always appreciated, which is by the great Reb Shamshon Raphael Hirsch. And if you understand it in the historical context, I think it's a very beautiful idea. Rav Hirsch lived at the time when he was fighting against the Reform. He was one of the strongest opponents to the movement. And Rav Hirsch in the 1800s said that there were many who claimed that the reason why women are not obligated in some of the mitzvahs is because they are second-class citizens. Because they're not good enough. They don't have an obligation to do everything. And after all, said Rav Hirsch, don't the women get up every day? The men make a bracha, shelo asani isha, and the women make a bracha, sha'asani kirtzono. So Rav Hirsch said the two claims that were hurled against the traditional community were, number one, do you believe that women are second-class citizens and therefore they don't have the opportunity to do all the mitzvahs that the men do? And number two, said Rav Hirsch, what do you mean when you say sha'asani kirtzono? What are you like, submitting to the fact that I know I'm not good enough, but I, you know, God made me the way He did, and it is what it is. Is that really what women are supposed to have in mind when they say that bracha in the morning? Absolutely not. Says Rav Hirsch, I'll explain to you what this means. What is the Torah Hashkafa? Writes Rav Hirsch, the reason for all of this is, why in the first place did God make some of the mitzvahs HaTorah very time dependent? What was the reason for that? Why did we set up a system that you have to sit in the sukkah on this day of the year, and you need to make sure that you have matzah on that day of the year, and you need to put on tefillin only at this time of the day, and tzitzis can only be worn then, and shofar has to be blown at this time of the... Why? What's the reason for all of this? Says Rav Hirsch, the reason is because human nature is such that we get busy with so many other things, and the first thing that we forget about is God Himself. And therefore the Ribono Shel Olam was aware of this concern. And he said, we're going to set up a system that there is no way you can go through an entire day without remembering about me. There is no way you can go through the experience of a year without taking some time during the year to remember God Himself. And therefore, I'm going to make you remember me. I'm going to force you by sitting in the sukkah at this time of the year, by sitting and eating matzah at that time of the year, by wearing your tzitzis and your tefillin and saying Kriya Shema at this time of the day, you will never go through a day without remembering God. Says Rav Hirsch. That is true. However, he says, HaTorah Meinicha, the Torah assumes, Sheyesh Leisha Dveikus Yisera V'Ne'emanus Shel Hislavus LiYehuda. Says Rav Hirsch, a woman is naturally more spiritually inclined and she does not need those built-in reminders. Writes Rav Hirsch, that is the reason why a woman does not share that obligation of time-bound mitzvos, because even without those built-in reminders, she instinctively knows how to be a more spiritual person. I'm not a psychologist, I don't know. But this is what Rav Hirsch suggests, and I think it's a beautiful suggestion. And along those lines, that's perhaps what it means, sha'asani kirtzono. Some say it means that the Ribono Shel Olam created me. I thank God for creating me in a way that was more in line with His will. That the Ribono Shel Olam created me in a natural way that is more aligned with what He wants me to do. And my mind is not going to be in 100 different places trying to find other things and other venues that can occupy my time and my heart. But my heart is naturally inclined to be closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's an amazing comment of the Kli Yakar, and I think if he didn't say it, it would be unacceptable for us to say, but after all, the Kli Yakar is printed in every Chumash, so he's a great tzaddik, and he's an accepted one. So the Kli Yakar writes that the very mistake of Moshe Rabbeinu, Shlach Lecha Anoshim, Moshe Rabbeinu was instructed to send out spies to check out the land of Israel. Writes the Kli Yakar, you could check it up on your own. That was Moshe Rabbeinu's mistake. Had he sent women, that mistake never would have happened. That's what he says. Because women are naturally more inclined to do the right thing. men are always looking for an out, always looking for a tax deduction, always looking to buck the system to get around. Here, says the Kli Yakar, had Moshe Rabbeinu only sent a group of women to spy out the land, they would have known what they were looking for, and they would have come back with the report that they were supposed to come back with. And the mistake that was made was that it was a group of men that were sent, because sometimes men don't have that innate spiritual understanding of where they're supposed to be going and what they're supposed to be doing. We need that reminder of the spiritual compass. Writes Rav Hirsch, that's perhaps what it means here when we say women are not obligated in the mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. So now we come to the mitzvah of Svira Sa'omer. Yeah? Yeah. Like, meaning, why does a man say Shalom Asani Isha?
Extra special thing. Why should men be grateful that they're not women?
No, meaning the man, when he says Shalom Asani Isha, it's not saying I'm grateful that I'm not a woman. It's saying the nature of obligations that men have to perform mitzvos are more than the obligation that a woman has. And I don't have a hard feeling about the fact that God instructed me to get up every morning and say Kriya Shema by this time. I'm proud of the fact that God instructed me to go to shul every morning and say Kriya Shema. On the other hand, a woman who does not need that, says Rav Hirsch, has nothing to be apologetic for. It's not that she's being left out of the mitzvah, it's that she has no obligation to perform that mitzvah, and therefore he says that is the way he understood these brachas. I think it's a very beautiful interpretation. But here, writes the Rambam, how do we understand the mitzvah of Svira Sa'omer? If you would ask anybody, I think most of us would say, mitzvah of Svira Sa'omer is a classic example of a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. After all, you can only do it on that day. And it only can be observed at this period of year. So the Rambam writes as follows. Look at number Dalet. The Rambam says, as we would expect, mitzvah zu al kol ish mi Yisrael uvechol makom uvechol zman. We have this mitzvah every male has this obligation, no matter if you live in Eretz Yisrael or in Chutz La'aretz of a Chol Zman. Doesn't matter if you live at a time of Beis HaMikdash or not, like we said before. The Rambam is of the opinion that Svira Sa'omer, even today, without a Beis HaMikdash, is still the same mitzvah d'araisa that it always was. Here he says, V'nashim v'avadim piturim mi'svira Sa'omer. The Rambam writes, women do not have an obligation. Why? Yeah. Why are slaves and women the same? That has nothing to do with condescending. It's very simple. The reason why is because the Gemara says that when you have a slave, it's the very same reason. When you have a slave who has a loyalty to his master, he doesn't have time to cut out on his master and say, I'm sorry, I gotta go daven, I have to go do this. And therefore the obligation that a slave has is limited. We don't assume that he has the same. Here the Rambam and the Gemara, whenever it says nashim va'avadim, it doesn't mean to be condescending. It means that, and I'm glad he brought it up, it means that the nature of their obligation remains the same. For all those who are walking out on me because they're offended by the comment, I'm kidding. So anyway, so the Rambam writes that they don't have an obligation of Svira because, he doesn't say why, but the obvious understanding is because it's time-bound, and therefore you don't have an obligation to do it. The Ramban writes in Maseches Kiddushin Daf Lamed Daled a very surprising comment. Writes the Ramban, women have an obligation and Svira Sa'omer are the same as men, and this is a mitzvah, shelo hazman grama. Now, how does one understand that? What does that mean? How is this not a time-bound mitzvah? No, but you have only a 24-hour window. So that's still time-bound. So how do you understand that? So the Divrei Malkiel, Rav Malkiel Tzvi Tannenbaum, who was one of the great gedolim in the second half of the 1800s, he has a tshuva sefer called Divrei Malkiel. He writes, what's always the easy answer? Tos hadafus. There's a printing mistake. The Ramban didn't mean it. When the Ramban said women are not exempt from this mitzvah, he meant women are exempt from the mitzvah. Okay. Now, how did he conjure up in his mind how the mistake crept in? So he says the following. Really, the original printing of the Ramban said that samach ayin, which we thought means svira sa'omer, is something that women are not exempt from. But really, that's not what he meant. Samachayin stands for Seder HaAvodah. Maybe. That's what he says. But this is not really the proper answer, because there are other Rishonim who quote the Ramban and say the same thing. And it's impossible to assume that all of this was just one big printing mistake that everybody accepted. It can't be. So what does the Ramban mean? Why would this be something that women share an obligation with men, if after all it's a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama? And the answer is based on what we said before. What triggers the obligation of Sfiras HaOmer? Is it miyom haviyachem es omer hatenufa? Is the trigger for our obligation the day on the calendar that says Tes Zayin Nisan? In which case, this would be a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama and women would not have an obligation. Or is the trigger the offering of the karban in the Beis HaMikdash? And it just so happens to be that every year we offer that karban on the same day. But it's not that I turn the calendar and it says on it, you know, if you look at God's calendar and it says to-do list today, does it say on there, today, on Tes Zayin Nisan, you have to start counting Sfira? No. It says on Tes Zayin Nisan, you have to offer the karban in the Beis HaMikdash. Once that happens, then we are now triggered into the mitzvah. And therefore the Achronim explain, that's not something that we refer to as a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. Just so happens to be, it turns out on the same day every year, but it is not a time-bound obligation, because the day is not the machayev. The day is not what triggers my obligation, but rather, the offering of the karban is what triggers my obligation, and therefore women perhaps share the same obligation as men do in this mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer. Be it as it may, as we know, many, many women today have taken upon themselves to do the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer and to count along with the entire community. Now, let me just make one final point in our shiur, and that is a very important one when we talk about the general mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer. The Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Litzato, in the Sefer Mesilas Yesharim, look at number Vav on the bottom of the page where he writes, Hine vadai tzarech sheyistar tamid tzar mamish al hagolus v'al hachurban. A person needs to carve out time to be mitztayer, to have pain over the galus and the churban. You know, unfortunately, we had another shooting this week in a shul in California. And whenever things like this happen, tragedies happen anywhere in the world, somebody is terribly sick or there's some kind of other tragedy, people say, you know, we need Mashiach. I agree we need Mashiach. I don't know why everybody assumes that when Mashiach comes, no one's going to get sick anymore. Is that true? I don't know. Anybody know? Is it true that the world is going to be such a different place? I don't know. Are there going to be no car accidents and no cancer anymore? I'm not convinced. I don't know. That is not the reason why we want Mashiach. It has nothing to do with people not being sick anymore. It has nothing to do with any other factor, but rather, says the Mesilas Yesharim, Mitzad ma shezeh gorem miut kavayacha lechvodo yizbarach. The reason why we want Mashiach is because God's presence is limited in our world without a Beis HaMikdash. And that is what we're supposed to be mourning, the fact that we do not place the Ribono Shel Olam at the center of our lives. Like the Navi Yeshaya writes, and the Dubna Magid explains it so beautifully, he says, imagine you come to a wedding, and it's your first time at a wedding. You have no idea what happens at a wedding. You see in the front, in the distance, you see somebody standing under a big canopy, and the guy, there's a man there and a woman, and the guy's wearing a tuxedo with very shiny, beautiful shoes and everything, and you walk up to him and you say, you look very excited, what are you so excited about? And he says to you, well, can't you see why I'm excited? And you say, I've never been to a wedding before, I don't know what's supposed to happen. And he responds, I'm excited because I have a new tuxedo, and I have new shoes, and I got a nice haircut, and I, you know, I'm very excited. Okay. You turn to the woman standing next to him, she's wearing a beautiful white gown, and she has all kinds of jewelry, and you ask this woman, you know, you look very happy, I'm just curious, why are you so happy tonight? What's happening? And she says, well, isn't it obvious? So he says, no, I've never been to a wedding, I don't know exactly. And she says, well, I've never worn such an expensive piece of jewelry, and I've never worn such a beautiful gown. I've never looked so good in my life. That's why I'm excited. Writes the Dubna Magid, what will that marriage look like? If under the chuppah, all they can focus on is the shoes and the jewelry and everything else that's so insignificant to what it means to be married. You're missing everything that marriage is all about. Well, writes the Dubna Magid, sometimes when we think about Mashiach, we make the same mistake. You ask somebody, why do we want Mashiach? So they're going to tell you because money's going to be falling down from the trees and we're going to be having all kinds of amazing experiences. I don't know. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. The Rambam happens to write, I'm sorry for the spoiler, but the Rambam happens to write, Olam kiminhago nohig. When Mashiach comes, the world is going to be the same world. We're going to have the opportunity to go to Eretz Yisrael. Believe it or not, some Jews are going to stay behind. They're going to make that decision not to go, just as has been the case every time there's been a geula. There were Jews who went, and there were Jews who didn't. That's going to be the same. But, says the Dubna Magid, what is it that we daven for? What is it that we aspire toward? What is that reality of Mashiach? He says, the Pasuk in the Sefer Yeshaya tells us, Sos asis b'Hashem, tagel nafshi b'elokai. The reason why I'm excited for that day of the coming of Mashiach, for the geula, for the return to Eretz Yisrael, is because then I'll have an understanding of what it means to be with God again. And if you don't have that perspective, says the Dubna Magid, you're like that chassan or kala that stands under the chuppah and says, I'm excited about today because of the gown that I wear. You're missing everything that your marriage is all about. You should be excited because you're finally united with your soulmate. You're finally united with the person that's going to give you so much meaning in life. But that's the mistake that we often make when we think about geula as well. There's nothing different. And says the Dubna Magid, don't make that mistake. Here writes the Mesilas Yesharim, we have to think about a galus and how painful it is. And why should we think about the pain of galus? Yes, you have a million and one reasons that you think are painful in galus, but the most painful part of galus is the fact that God is not here. It's the fact that we don't have the relationship with Him that we're supposed to have. And therefore writes the Mesilas Yesharim, Yis'ave le'geula. We need to anticipate with sincerity for the coming of Mashiach Levishaba Yiyah Ilui Lakavad Hashem Yisbarach, because that will bring about the presence of the Shechina once again. V'im Yomar Adam. Next paragraph on the second side. V'im Yomar Adam, and if somebody will say, Ma'ani Uma'ani Safun, who am I already? After all, the Chafetz Chaim lived before me, and so did the Chazon Ish. And so did Rabbi Kiva Eger and the Vilna Gaon and the Minchas Chinuch and the Mechaber and the Ramah and the Shach and the Taz and everybody else. And all these great people daven for a geula and God didn't listen to them. So you're telling me I should make time to worry about a geula? What am I going to do? Well, says the Mesilas Yesharim, Hamipnei Tfilasi Yikansi HaGalios V'Tatzmiach HaYeshua. Do you believe that because of your Shmona Esrei that you're going to daven, that a geula is actually going to come? Shuvaso Betzido, says the Mesilas Yesharim, the answer is very simple. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, if God knew that Lo Tov Hayosa Adam Levado, it's not good for man to be alone, and He knew that man always needs a partner, then why didn't He create a man and a woman together at the beginning of the creation of the world? Why did He wait? Why did He say later, oh, you know, I realize, Eselo Ezer Kenegdo, good idea. What do you think, God forgot about that? He didn't realize that Adam Arishan would be lonely? So ask the Gemara, why did He do this? And the Gemara says the reason why is because it was to teach all of humanity a lesson that Bishvili Nivra Ha'olam, that the world is worthy of being created for one human being. Because one human being can make a major difference in the world. And a human being never has a right to say, well, if this person before me wasn't able to accomplish it, and if somebody else wasn't able to make the difference in the world that I want to make, it's something that is impossible. No. Says the Gemara, Lefikach Nivra Adam Yechidi, because every person has the opportunity to make a major mark in the world, to make a major difference in the world. And therefore, that is why Adam Arishan was created by himself. And therefore, he says, the same goes with regard to a geula. We daven for a geula and we ask ourselves, you know how many people have davened for a geula before us? You know how many people have been yearning for this and none of them have been answered? HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns back to us and says, Asei es shelachem. You do what you have to do, writes the Mesilas Yesharim. Niver adam yechidi, maybe your tefillah is what makes the difference. And I mention all of this because Sfiras HaOmer is one of those mitzvahs that we assume is not a mitzvah midoraisa. In our generation, we do not have a biblical obligation. And the only reason why we count Sfira today is to remind us of what was in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, that we don't want to forget what life was like in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Well, ask the Baal HaMor. Every time you do a mitzvah that is something that only comes around periodically, we make a bracha of Shehecheyanu. So you light Hanukkah candles the first night, you make a Shehecheyanu. You go ahead and you lay in the Megillah on Purim, you say Shehecheyanu. You blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, you say Shehecheyanu. You sit in the sukkah the first time, you say Shehecheyanu. You shake the lulav, you say Shehecheyanu. All of a sudden, comes to the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, where's the Shehecheyanu? What happened? Did we forget? Why is Sfiras HaOmer any different? Well, writes the Baal HaMor, if you look here at the end of the source sheet, number Ches, after the three dots, the Baal HaMor says, L'Sfiras HaOmer, why is it that by Sfiras HaOmer we don't say Shehecheyanu before the first time we perform this mitzvah is because Ein bo shum zecher l'shum hanah, el la'agmas nafshenu l'churban beis ma'avayenu. What are you going to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Thank you so much for giving me this mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer today, because it reminds me of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. That's awful, says the Baal HaMor. You don't say Shehecheyanu for that. And the objective of all of the mitzvah that we do today is simply to remind us of the Beis HaMikdash, of the fact that we're missing that Karban on Pesach and Shavuos, of the fact that there's so much lacking in our lives. And in fact, Tosfos writes in Maseches Megillah, every time you do a mitzvah, you do the mitzvah and you move on with life. You don't generally say to God, you know, I did this for you, tit for tat, I hope you're going to do something back for me. So we do it by Halakas Neiros Shabbos. It's a strange thing. Why is it that when it comes to lighting the Shabbos candles, we do the mitzvah and then we offer a tefillah? It's a good question. Rashi writes in Maseches Shabbos there's a reason for it. But it's unusual. We generally don't find that. After Shabbos is over, we don't say, you know what? God, I kept Shabbos for you, and therefore I hope that this week you're going to do that for me. That's not the way it works. We don't do that. Well, why is it that when it comes to the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, we say Asher Kedushanu Mitzvos Avitzivanu, we say the bracha, we count Sfira, and then we add Harachaman. You know what, God? I did your mitzvah of Sfira, and I hope Hu Yachzer Lana Avodas Beis HaMikdash L'mkoma. I hope in the merit of what I'm doing, you're going to bring us back a Beis HaMikdash. Why do we do that? We don't offer a tefillah by any other mitzvah that we perform. And the answer is very simple. Because this whole mitzvah that we do today is simply to remind us of Churban Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, as we're doing that, we say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're not going to say Shehecheyanu when we count Sfira, because we are not excited about the reality of life that we have today. And we are also going to offer a tefillah at the end of Sfira every single night, because we want to remember not only the fact that we're doing a mitzvah, but we want to remind ourselves of the fact that we are inadequate, that life is not the way it's supposed to be lived, that there is something very lacking in the reality of our lives as we live them today. And therefore, after we count Sfira, this is not a tit for tat, but rather we say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we yearn for your Beis HaMikdash, because that is why we have this mitzvah today, HaRachaman, Hu Yachzer Lano Avodes Beis HaMikdash. After we count Sfira every night, understand that this is an opportunity to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we no longer observe this mitzvah in the way that is only midrabanan, zechel and migdash, the way we do it today, but we hope to come back to that time of Hu Yachzer Lano Avodas Beis HaMikdash, when we'll have the mitzvah and the way it's supposed to be performed, being bookended by the Karban on Pesach, on Tezayin Nisan, by the Karban Omer, and then bookended on the other end with the Karban on Shavuos at the culmination of these 49 days. That is what Sfiras HaOmer is all about. It's something that was instituted as a basic Zeichel HaMikdash. It's something that we need to remind ourselves of. And as the Mesilas Yesharim writes, this is an obligation that we of Jews have throughout the year, to have built-in reminders for ourselves of the pain of the fact that we are in the Gullus. And the pain is not simply because of the fact that we have so many tzaras, which we obviously do, but the pain is more in the fact that we do not have an opportunity to be as closely connected with HaKadosh Baruch Hu as we would like to be. So Amir